Hello and welcome to another podcast edition of Taiwan Talk. I'm Keith Manconi. We return this week on the show to the dark period in Taiwan's history known as the White Terror Era. And once again, we're going to be looking at it through the lens of literature. Of course, last week we spoke with author Shauna Young Ryan about her recent work of historical fiction, Green Island. But today, we're going to be taking a look at a novel written during the White Terror period itself. American author Vern Schneider gave a U.S. audience a rare glimpse of life in Taiwan through his 1953 novel, A Pail of Oysters. Now, what made this work stand out at the time is that unlike many other prominent U.S. writers, Schneider did not shy away from discussing some of the human rights abuses being committed by the Chiang Kai-shek regime. The book created quite a splash at the time, back in the 1950s, prompting a great deal of praise, but also stirring some controversy. It's now getting re-released by Taiwan-based English-language publisher Camphor Press, with a new foreword by Jonathan Benda of Northeastern University. I recently spoke with Benda to get his thoughts on what this work has to offer a modern audience, and also learn a bit more about the time in which it was written. Jonathan Benda, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
So, the book centers largely on a Taiwanese peasant who finds himself at odds with the governing ROC forces. And a lot of the book is centered around how that tension plays out. So it's kind of a, we learn a lot about the tension between the local Taiwanese and the, some would describe as occupying mainlanders through that story. Mm-hmm. But also we learn about the story very much through the lens of this American journalist who comes to learn about Taiwan and what's happening during this period in Taiwan's history. And if, you know, if you squint with one eye, that American journalist almost looks like the author, Vern Schneider, because Mr. Schneider also came to Taiwan in the early 1950s to research this book, you know, in an effort to get to know Taiwan a little bit better so that he could write this book. So tell us a little bit about this author and how he became interested in Taiwan, because he was in Asia long before he became interested in Taiwan, right?
So Vern Schneider served in East Asia during World War II, and in 1944, he was sent to the Navy Military Government School at Princeton to study about Taiwan and learn about Taiwan. The U.S. originally planned to invade Taiwan and occupy Taiwan as part of their attack on Japan. Of course, that never happened, but he learned a lot about Taiwan through that program. And then after he went to Okinawa and was involved in the occupation of Okinawa, he went to Korea. And actually, interestingly enough, it was in Korea that he met some people from Taiwan, from different ethnic groups. There were Hakka, there were Taiwanese, there was some Aborigine people in Taiwan that he met in Korea and learned about their experiences under the government of the KMT there.
Mm. And so then eventually he made his way to Taiwan, though, to research this book. How did that get started?
After he finished Tea House of the August Moon, which was a bestseller, and as we know, it got turned into a play and into a movie and really was a major part of his career. He started working on a book version of what had originally been a short story, Pail of Oysters, and he got an award for Tea House of the August Moon and used some of that money to go to Taiwan for 3 months and do research on Taiwanese society and culture.
And so then he spent a whole summer in Taiwan trying to get the lay of the land and understand what ROC rule meant for the locals in Taiwan.
Yes, yeah, he spent 3 months in Taiwan. I think he spent most of the time in Taipei, but he also was able to travel in other parts of Taiwan, and he was able to interview people, talk to people informally in markets. He knew some Japanese from his experience in Okinawa, so and Japanese was still spoken by a lot of people in Taiwan at the time. And he also had an interpreter who helped him. But he had to be really careful about the kinds of things he talked about with people because he knew, you know, the eyes of the secret police were on him. He wasn't, he couldn't just go and say, what do you think about the Taiwan government, the KMT government or anything like that. He had to kind of go indirectly in talking about these things. So he gathered a lot of information about the society as well, because he wanted to really, give a sense of what it was like to live in Taiwan at that time for the Taiwanese people.
And that's a pretty interesting subject to take on at the time. I mean, even just Asia as a whole, I don't think was a terribly common subject for a U.S. author. And then take it even a step further, Taiwan. I mean, was anybody else at that time writing about Taiwan?
Well, most of what was written about Taiwan at that time was more pro Chiang Kai-shek. Some of what George Kerr wrote at the time, he was later the author of Formosa Betrayed, as probably a lot of listeners know. What he wrote at the time after the what he called the March massacres, the February 28th massacre, he was obviously very much against the government, but a lot of what was published was more pro-Jiang and anti-communist. And Henry Luce, who published Time magazine and Life magazine, was a big fan of Chiang Kai-shek and Madame Chiang Kai-shek, and so he published more pro-Jiang articles. And in 1951, James Michener also wrote a book called The Voice of Asia that was really about more about the U.S.'s role in Asia, and he has a series of chapters on Taiwan. There, where he has interviewed some, actually mostly mainlanders, actually entirely mainlanders, and talks about how eager they are to get into a war and fight against the communists and go back to China. So that was kind of the tenor, I think, of public discourse on Taiwan at the time. It was very much pro-Jiang and how Chiang Kai-shek had really improved things in Taiwan. And yes, there was 228, but that was just one person's mismanagement. And Chiang Kai-shek, when he came in, was really trying to clean up all that and make life better for the people of Taiwan. That was kind of what the dominant discourse on Taiwan was at that time.
Right, and so all of American consciousness about Taiwan was really caught up in this Cold War mentality. You couldn't think about Taiwan without thinking about communists versus, non-communists.
Yes.
Versus the Chiang Kai-shek and his regime. And so when Schneider wrote this book, I mean, was it almost as a corrective to that kind of mentality? Was he trying to push back against that to a certain extent?
Yes, I think so. He was trying to show what the lives of people in Taiwan were really like, and give people a sense of that things were not as wonderful as they were hearing, to give Americans another alternative perspective on Taiwan through the experiences of these characters, Li Liu, the oyster farmer, and Dee Dee, the young Taiwanese boy, and his sister, Precious Jade. He wanted to really give people, from those people's personal experiences, or those characters' personal experiences, he really wanted to give a sense of what Taiwan was like, and counter this dominant way of that Taiwan was being talked about in the press. And he thought fiction would be a really good way to do that, because it was something that could really bring readers into the lives of the characters in a way that he felt that nonfiction couldn't really do, because you could identify with the characters and you could feel with them.
Right, and he's Schneider is really trying to give a pretty detailed account of what life is like in Taiwan. I mean, as you mentioned there, the protagonist, he's half Hakka, half Aboriginal. So he's really going into detail of what the society that makes up Taiwan looks like. Now, as you pointed out and as other writers have pointed out, some of the things he gets a little bit wrong here and there. You know, some cities aren't exactly where they're supposed to be in his writing, but he really is trying to get convey a sense of the real shape of Taiwanese society to an American audience.
So when he went to Taiwan, as I was mentioning, he did a lot of research, interviewing people, observing. He said that he walked around Taipei and walked down all the different kinds of streets and recorded the prices of food. So there's discussion of how much things cost. You know, Precious Jade and her brother Didi, they don't have a lot of money. And so he talks about how much money that they're willing to spend on rent for a room and how much they can spend on food. And Snyder actually did a lot of research to find out what things actually cost at the markets and at the noodle stands and things like that, because and how much rent was, because he wanted to give an accurate picture. He talked to the sellers in markets. He took notes. He told George Kerr later on that he actually hadn't taken a lot of notes because he was afraid that the government would, you know, confiscate his notes. But he did take notes, and he didn't write anything. There's no smoking gun in the notes from what I saw, but there's a lot of description of things like the naming conventions for girls. So, you know, I think he did try to really give an accurate impression, and I think he does a good job. Of course, there's a few mistakes here and there. People who have a better knowledge of, say, the streets in Taipei than I do would probably be able to point out mistakes on where he put things. And as I say in the introduction, he accidentally puts Taichung south of Changhua at one point. But
whoopsie.
You know, yeah. He
was only there for 3 months. It's not bad.
Yeah, other than that, I think he did a really good job of conveying the life. And another thing about fiction, too, that he could do that perhaps wouldn't happen in nonfiction is he could take these characters from really different walks of life. You know, the oyster fisherman, Li Liu, and Precious Jade, who was sold into prostitution by her adoptive father, and her brother, Didi, who's kind of also an adopted son, and he's being trained to go to college. You know, these were people from very different walks of life. In a nonfiction work, it would be hard to bring these three different kinds of characters together, and especially to bring them together with the American, Ralph Barton. You wouldn't see that happening. So he's able to do that in a work of fiction, and there's a little bit of dramatic license to that. But it's a way of showing people, you know, American readers that, you know, there are these very different kinds of people in Taiwan, and different ethnicities and social class and gender issues.
Probably a much more detailed look at Taiwan than any of the audience in the U.S. had seen before then. But kind of getting to that response from the readership. I mean, this is a book that, based on the introduction that you wrote for that, it looks like many critics were quite appreciative of it, but in a lot of other ways, it was not exactly received well by a lot of readers.
It was critically praised by at least, you know, a large group of critics, and it actually won an award. I think it was the American Library Association, an award. There were also reviewers that were very critical of it and said that he painted a very one-sided picture of Taiwan and a very, you know, it was a picture that was – he painted a picture that was too anti-Chiang Kai-shek, anti-KMT, and everything was black and white and there are no grays. That was what one critic said. I don't happen to agree with that, but that's what this critic, I think, for the Christian Science Monitor wrote. But yes, the book didn't sell as well as Tea House of the August Moon. I think part of it was probably that the mood was very dark in that. It's a very somber kind of book. It doesn't end very happily. I don't want to give away the ending, but things happen that are kind of a surprise. It's a somewhat tragic ending. So
right, and probably part of the reason that he wrote it this way is because, as you said, it was to a certain extent a corrective of the overly positive narratives that were coming out from a lot of writers about Taiwan at the time.
Yes, and it shows in the way that the book ends that things in Taiwan were not as happy and as good as pro KMT writers would have people believe. I think another reason the book didn't do well is, according to some rumors, I guess you could say, is that copies of the book were taken from libraries in the United States. Some pro Chiang Kai-shek, pro KMT people are said to have taken the books away, basically stolen them from the libraries. And Vern Snyder himself was suspicious that the book was being suppressed by the U.S. government. And he actually did a Freedom of Information Act request to find out, you know, what was going on, if there was any kind of U.S. government interference with the publication of his book. Unfortunately, I didn't find out what his results were, because the archives at Monroe, the Monroe Museum, didn't have anything on that. But it's interesting to know that he actually did such a request to find out that he was that suspicious.
So this is, certainly, as you say, a book with quite a bit of interesting history to it, and now it's being re-released by Camphor Press with your introduction. I guess one thing that's pretty striking to me is, I mean, this book was originally released to the American audience in the 1950s as something of a corrective for American ignorance of what's going on in Taiwan. Now we're up in 2016, and, oh man, most people in the U.S. still don't really know what's going on in Taiwan. So, I mean, isn't this book as relevant as ever?
I think so. I think it tells people, first of all, what led Taiwan to becoming being in the position that it is now, you know, kind of in the shadow of China. And I think Americans still don't have a really strong understanding of Taiwan. And they might have heard about the recent elections and the defeat of the KMT by opposition parties, the DPP and other parties. And they might be wondering, you know, why this might come about. Why did Ma Ying-jeou become so unpopular? And I think the book can give you some sense of the history of these relations among the different groups in Taiwan, the Aborigines, the Taiwanese, and the mainlanders, and give you a sense of the complexity of that relationship and some of the conflicts that were going on at that time.
And perhaps maybe the most poignant reminder for us as Americans, I mean, I grew up in the U.S. as well, so it's good for me to get a reminder of this, is just how far back American involvement goes in Taiwan, and you know, how much of a real impact U.S. policy has on this country over here. I mean, this book in a lot of ways is just a reminder of how deep that goes.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that this book really points out is perhaps the unintended consequences of a lot of the U.S.'s actions in other parts of the world, and in this case, of course, Taiwan, that, you know, everyday Americans might not know about. The U.S. support for the government of Taiwan at the time led to a lot of tragic consequences for people in Taiwan. I think they're one of the interesting things, especially in the short story, A Pail of Oysters, is that really the only presence of America in that short story version, there's no Ralph Barton in there, but the presence of America is known through basically military material, trucks and weapons and flashlights and things like that, that the U.S. has provided the what's called the Save the Country Army. So it's really powerful in that sense that, you know, the image of America that is given to the people of Taiwan in that story is of it's how it supplies the, you know, the oppressors, basically. And in the novel, there's also, you know, this sense of the U.S. supporting the oppressors, and what effects that has on everyday people. And, you know, people need to have a sense of how the decisions their leaders make affect people in other parts of the world.
All right. Well, the book is A Pail of Oysters by Vern Schneider. It is out now by Camphor Press. We have been talking to Jonathan Benda. Jonathan, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for talking with me. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you for listening to another podcast edition of Taiwan Talk. Of course, the place to go to learn more about this work is camp4press.com. While you're there, you can find a whole lot of other interesting books also covering Taiwan and East Asia. Taiwan Talk is, of course, ICRT's weekly interview segment, bringing you news from and about Taiwan. You can find these interviews broadcast each and every Monday during the 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. news broadcast at the top of the hour. You can also find extended versions of the interviews, such as the one you just heard, on iTunes, the ICRT website, and on SoundCloud. If you do listen through iTunes or SoundCloud, please do take a second to leave a comment while you're there. Let us know what you're thinking, which is helpful, so we can bring you the stuff that you want and helps other people discover the program. Signing off from the ICRT studio, I am Keith Manconi. See you again next time.